Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 208 with the title, Reclaiming Intimate Connection. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Shanae Paylett. Shanae is a nationally recognized sex and intimacy educator, coach, best-selling author, and retreat leader who helps committed couples repair disconnection and rediscover emotional and sexual intimacy after years of struggle. When I asked Shanae to describe her superpower, she said that it is her ability to guide couples through shame and silence into honest, embodied conversations that restore safety, desire, and deep connection. Hello, Shanae. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. I am super excited to be here and have this conversation with you and help your audience learn how to have a better sex life and improve it.
When your email came in with your blurb for the show, I read it and thought, well, this sounds interesting. Sex and intimacy educator. I thought, well, as a 60-year-old, I've had plenty of life to have sex and it be intimate. So it'd be interesting to see where we go with this.
Beautiful.
So you're based in the States somewhere, is it?
I am. Yes, I'm in the States. I'm in Asheville, North Carolina, Western North Carolina, in the mountains. We just snowed here a little bit last night.
Oh wow, wow! Because I always think of the Carolinas as being sort of the South and hot and sticky.
Yeah.
When I was there in 93, it was very hot and sticky. So you've got snow and mountains.
Well, yeah, and in the winter, most of North Carolina gets colder anyway. Like, you know, people think it's going to be warm here, but it's not. It's, you know, even by the beach, it's probably down in the maybe freeze right here. It's, I don't know, in the 20s.
I was chatting to another guest who is from Atlanta in Georgia, which is probably a neighbor, isn't it, ish?
Yeah, like 5 hours away, Georgia. Yeah.
It was saying, they were saying it was cold.
Yeah.
But back last November, so you were having quite a cold snap, if you like.
Yes.
Disproportionate.
Yes, yeah. Yes. That is true. But, you know, we've got our warm coats and our fireplaces and UGG boots. It's all good.
Oh, yeah. We've got to have our UGG boots.
We've got to have our UGG boots.
My UGG boots as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not really cold enough here for too much. But, yeah, we're more of a wet and windy sort of part of the country. So, yeah, miserable, damp.
Yeah.
I can handle snow. I can handle a bit of ice, but yeah, damp.
Yeah, that's kind of hard too, the damp, the, yeah.
So you said in your notes that you put through that you yourself had experienced a 26-year sexless marriage. And you obviously had an epiphany. You had some moment in that time that triggered you into doing something about that. So tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was married for 26 years, and that marriage was primarily sexless, probably for 20 years, which is actually less uncommon than you would think, right? Like there's a lot of couples that are actually living in sexless marriages, and mine was really related to a lot of my own trauma growing up in childhood, not sexual abuse trauma, but shame trauma, which is a thing, and some medical trauma, which is also a thing. So it just made sex uncomfortable and painful, and my body was just really, really shut down. And because we were super young, I was 24 when I got married, I just graduated law school, we really didn't have skills knowledge, information, the ability to be able to process this, to talk about it, to solve it, to do anything about it other than fight about it and then just stop it because we had to stop the fighting and be parents. And so it just went on, you know, for 20 years. And it, for me, was like, oh, you know, doesn't feel good anyway, want to do this. Like it just, it made no sense to me that people wanted to have sex ever. Just didn't. I know, but it's true. And so, you know, like, what do? Like, we take all of that sexual energy, which we have, and, like, poured it into my kids and my business and my hobbies and my side businesses and allowed the relationship to wither, because that's what happens a lot of the times when there's bad communication, you're feeling disconnected from your partner, there's a big issue you can't talk about, and intimacy just, like, fades. Over a period of time until we found ourselves living separate lives, living in separate bedrooms, even while our kids were growing up. So yeah, it was a challenging, it didn't feel challenging at the time because I was so busy with other stuff. But looking back on it, it's like, yeah, there was a lot of grief that happened of the, not so much the sex, but the lack of closeness, the lack of feeling emotionally supported and emotionally connected.
Does sex really matter in a relationship?
Yeah. So interesting. I just posted on Facebook a question. I literally posted that question. Like, you can, and it was okay. Like, you can have sex without love, but in a long-term relationship, can you have love? You can have sex without love, but in a long-time relationship, can you have love without sex? And I got a lot of feedback and a lot of comments on that question that I posed. And it was really fascinating to me to get to hear what people had to say. So what I heard from a lot of people, and mind you, a lot of these people who are responding to my Facebook posts are already pretty sex positive, and a whole bunch of them are already in, like, open relationships. So it's not really apples to apples. Right. What I heard very, very frequently was like, yes, you can. You know, like, that does happen over time. Things do change. And I get that. And I always question whether that's happening with consent, whether it's happening because conversations aren't happening and actually one partner wants sex and the other partner has maybe a lower desire. So, you know, it's actually a great question. So clearly there's a lot of couples that are together who aren't having sex, right? The question that I always ask is like, is that consensual? Have you guys had a conversation and decided like, yes, you know, we're in a new stage of life and we just don't want to have sex anymore. We just want to cuddle, maybe. And that's just what we want. Or is it that one person is holding a lot of resentment because their sexual needs aren't being met? Or, you know, as is often the case, is this really about we're not having sex because there's other relationship issues going on underneath that, and we're feeling emotionally disconnected. And because we're feeling emotionally disconnected and there's a lot of resentment and anger, we don't really want to have sex with each other, right? So there's a lot of different ways that you can skin that cat, if you will. It's a great question. I was super curious about how people answered it.
I've got loads of things firing off in my head right now. So how would you describe sex? I mean, because sex is a spectrum.
It is.
And it doesn't have to be penetrative. There are other ways of...
Yeah.
So how would you describe sex?
I think that's a great question, right? And I didn't mind that. But, you know, typically, I think when people think about sex, they think about penis and vagina, which we call in the sex therapy world PIV, sex, right? I don't define it that way. I think that's one of the challenges that a lot of couples have in their relationship is they're so oriented towards penetrative sex and they're so oriented towards goals and orgasms that they lose out on a lot of other opportunities. So like I define sex as a very, you know, sort of wide spectrum, just like you said, right? Anything from like having a makeout session, like a first base makeout session to penetrative sex, right? And anything in between. So if you can, you know, open up the definition of sex, then there's a lot of ways to be able to connect with your partner erotically that don't have to involve that don't necessarily have to involve penetration. That's helpful for couples to understand that, but they also have to shift their mind, right? There has to be a paradigm shift around what sex is and, you know, what it is now and what it could potentially be.
I think back to my school days, you know, those behind the bicycle sheds, you know, going for walks in the woods. And I remember having several girlfriends at the time who we would certainly not go all the way. This is not a meatloaf bad out of hell, I've got to know right now, will you love me forever, you know, type conversation. We were probably first base, second base, uh-huh, groping, fondling, uh-huh, probably achieving orgasm, but not with any PIV, if you want, using the phrase you use. And I'm pretty sure at the time we thought that was pretty risky. We didn't feel like we were holding back. We just respected each other enough to say, we don't want to go any further than that. And even couples now can still go a long way without actually having penetrative sex.
Totally. And it's a good thing to do.
Yeah. And also just putting a sort of multidimensional spin on this. You know, we talk about this in cisnormative, heteronormative terms. Not everybody has one of each in a couple. Sometimes you don't have a penis, you don't have a vagina in a couple. PIV is not the only way of being intimate, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And non-heteronormative, right? There's a lot of different ways to be intimate. But yeah, it's definitely not, you know, it can vary from, you know, like I said, from having a makeout session to even just sexting with each other or, you know, talking about a fantasy. Like that can be a huge turn on for a couple. They don't have to do anything about it, but they can just talk about it, right? So the more we can open up the definition of sex, the more ability hopefully couples will have to be able to have more sexual interaction with each other.
So what we're saying here then is that the term sex is not one thing. Is there a commonality? Is it, to put a phrase, something that gets your juices flowing in some way?
Yeah, that's how I define it. Like anything that creates erotic energy is sex. That's it. That's my definition. That's a very, very broad definition. But I think it's a definition that opens up a lot more possibilities for people to be able to interact with their partner sexually without having all of the pressure that comes with, you know, genital focused sex.
Yeah. So generating that intimacy in however you do that. And that can be just through touch, through making out. It could be just be holding and hugging each other and just being with each other and feeling that energy.
Right.
Without having to go all the way, whatever all the way means.
Yeah, exactly.
Not everybody can, you know, without blue pills and Viagra, some people can't achieve that. Some people have menopause, their vagina is not capable of receiving anymore for various reasons. So yeah, a whole host of reasons medically why it may not be practical as well.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
So I'm assuming that when you, using yourself as an example, as you put yourself on the line here, was it something you drifted into it and nobody noticed the slide until it got too far? You obviously had children and there's always obviously a pause when you're raising the children. You've got so much stress going on. You're trying to work, look after the kids, all this other thing. You end up with tension and arguments and debate, as you talked about. You fall out of love a bit and you never quite reclaim that. Is that typically a pattern?
I don't know that my pattern I don't think is typical because of all of the pain that I had with sex. Yeah, so it was just like, I don't want to do this. My body hurts. This isn't fun. You know, you're not getting off. I'm not getting off. I'm crying. You're frustrated. Like, screw this, right? So I don't know that I'm typical, but what is typical, right? And take me out of the equation for the moment. I think what is typical is, yeah, of course, you know, it does tend to happen and it does tend to fade often slowly before you know it, right? Certainly when you have children, children screw up people's sex lives. We all know that, right? That's just an absolute reality. It makes it so much harder to find time to connect. Like, it's just, you know, you never know when they're going to run into the bedroom, right? Like, it is a problem. And even as they get older, like, I was just working with a couple the other day and they're like, well, we love our 13-year-old daughter, but like, she wants to like come in at 10 o'clock at night and like, you know, shoot the shit with us. And it's great. We love that. But that really screws up our sex life because we don't know when that's going to happen, right? So it's not like once they're past 10, things actually change. So that does make it challenging. And you know, you really have to make it a priority. But I do think that, you know, and this is kind of what my Facebook post proved, right? Is that like it does fade slowly over time. And some of this is, you know, some level of it is a natural, like things are going to change when you're in a long-term relationship, right? Unless you really, it's important to you and you really make a priority to keep things interesting and new and different and experiment because people start getting bored. And a lot of times when you start getting bored, you know, sex is only okay. Then maybe I'd rather be cooking, right? Like it just doesn't become as important, as much of a priority when it just doesn't feel that good, or if it's only okay, or it's starting to get boring. And I think that's part of the reason that that sex starts fading over time. We're just doing the same thing over and over again. I can just pull up my vibrator and have an orgasm just as quick as you can get me. That, you know what I'm saying? And that doesn't actually hit the desires that we want. Like it doesn't hit our turn-ons. And I think that's where a lot of couples get stuck. They get in this rote place. It's not really hitting their erotic desires and their erotic turn-ons. And so it just becomes, at best, at worst, it's like, I'm going to do it to please you because I don't want to lose you. And then it becomes obligation sex. And then often that builds up, you know, some resentment. And so I don't really want to do that. I don't want to feel like I'm having obligation sex. So it just, it stops. And, you know, does stress get in the way? Like, let's take kids out of the equation, you know, financial stress, you know, familial stress, like all of the things, all of the ways in which life is so stressful, especially now, right? Especially in the United States right now. It really makes people lose their libido. They're just like, you know, that is one of the biggest libido killers is stress. And I think a lot of people are feeling a lot of stress in their bodies.
Yeah, the world is not a safe place these days, is it?
Not a safe place these days.
We're closer to nuclear war than we've been since JFK.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah, we're all feeling it. Is this true? What about say, when couples are in these sexless marriages, sexless relationships, sexless whatever, however you want to describe the coupling, one of them can be jolted into another, into a sexy based relationship with somebody else randomly, you know, sort of have an affair, flirting, sexting, glance at the bar, quick drink, all of a sudden something happens. So, does that kind of mean that inherently we're all wired to go, I can do this again, but it needs that difference, that trigger, that spark, those dopamine chemicals floating around in your head or something, kicking off. So we've all got that potential to rekindle it with somebody else.
Yeah,
it's a challenge of trying to rekindle it together.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I think that's one of the reasons, that the biggest reasons that couples separate, right, is they're not having sex, right? That is a huge pain point. In a lot of relationships, or somebody goes outside of the marriage because they're not having sex in the marriage, and then, you know, they go outside of the marriage. And yes, I mean, there is the absolute reality that it is very, very hard to reclaim that new relationship energy in the context of a long-term relationship, because it's very, very specific to that period of time when you first meet somebody, those first 6 to 18 months, right? And the dopamine hormones are just surging through your body, which is basically just Mother Nature's, you know, imprint on want you to procreate, really what's happening, right? Even if you're 50 or 60 years old, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know,
you're going at it like bunnies, right?
Exactly, because of that new relationship energy. And that new relationship energy naturally fades after 18 months at the most, right? Couples that have been able to maintain that level of connection that I've seen and worked with or have talked to, experienced, are really couples who make it a priority and continue to understand that they need to change things up in their relationship. Like, they can't do the same thing over and over again. They need to be curious. They need to explore. They need to try new things. And not just in their sex life, by the way, right? Like, in other aspects of their life, like, we do have research that shows, it's fascinating, but it shows that couples that do a lot of different interesting things all the time, like, oh, one day we're going to go to the museum and the next day we're going to take a cooking class and, you know, whatever, have a better sex life. Because they're more focused on doing new things and changing things up. And just doing those things makes it more exciting and interesting to be with your partner, because you're experiencing new things with them all their time. And you get to look at them and you're like, oh, look at you. Like, you're cooking in the kitchen. I've never seen you do pastry before, right? And you kind of fall in love with them again. So, you know, that's one of the things that I've really learned is how important it is in the context of a long-term relationship to find time outside of the bedroom to do new fun and interesting things with your partner, to be explored, to adventurous, to try new things, because it does keep that energy going. And then that can flow over to the bedroom as well.
Again, you're talking about things that are flying through my head. It must be really one of the challenges must be trying to synchronize your libido. Yeah. Where I'm coming to bed late, or I'm going to bed early, you're going to bed late, you want to read your book, I want to finish watching the telly program, just finish off some work, and you say, I'll do the washing up, take the dog out, and you just go,
yeah.
And, or if one person's feeling a bit horny earlier, and the other person's in this other zone, it's trying to synchronize those as libido moments, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is often a challenge in long-term relationships. You know, I hear that all the time. I'm a morning person, he's a night person. or she's a night person. And then that is a challenge, right? But the answer to that is communication. The answer to everything is communication. Can we find a compromise? Can we figure out a time? Can we put something on the calendar, at a time of day that actually works for both of us? Can we be very conscious around our desire to have sexy time or to have sex that night or that morning or whatever? And I know that people are like, oh, planning it is like, it takes the spontaneity out. But it's like, you know, yeah, the spontaneity has to come out at times, right? Planning it actually allows your brain, which is our biggest organ during sex, to be able to start to get on board. Yeah, we have, you know, sexy time planned for tonight. Let me start thinking about that. What do I want to do? What do I want my body to feel like? You know, maybe for some people, it's like, oh, maybe I need to masturbate a little bit before, right? Like, really thinking about what your body needs to start to do what you can do inside of you to, you know, pull up some of your desire. But that does take commitment, and it takes a level of consciousness and awareness of what your arousal pathway is and really making sex a priority in the relationship. And that is a huge, huge difference when couples make sex a priority in their relationship. Then they start having a lot more enjoyable sex.
If you're having an affair and you're having to sneak around and do things, then it's often not spontaneous anyway, because what you're thinking is, oh, I've got to book a hotel room. Yeah. I've got to sneak out the house.
Totally.
I've got to make all this cover story. It's surreptitious sex. It isn't often spontaneous. Maybe if you're picking somebody or hooking up at a bar, maybe it is. But
once
you get into week two, you're now sneaking around.
Planning as well. But I think the difference is that for some people, the risk is sexy. Right. For a lot of people, like, the, You know, there's something about, it's like, I might get caught, right? Like there's some sort of erotic charge potentially underneath that for some people. That's part of, you know, what turns them on is being in a risky situation, right? Which you can totally translate to your partner, right? Well, if in fact, you know, being in a little bit of a risky situation is part of my turn on, well, what if, like, you know, we try to have sex in an elevator, or, you know, we go out to dinner and I put my hand under her skirt or whatever, right? Like, there are ways to do that in the context of the relationship. It's understanding what your turn on is that actually allows that to happen.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. In my relationships over the years, I've definitely tick all those boxes. You know, there are other opportunities. And when we broaden that definition of what sex means, and it's not just that final getting down and dirty and that, yeah, that groaning and grunting at the end. It's all the things that go into that. Yeah. And it's sometimes it's just touch. Sometimes it's just connection, being there. My wife and I, we often flirt a bit. We do a lot of stately homes. We go and visit a lot of old properties in the UK, and sometimes we work out that when we're walking around these big old homes and we're the only person in the room, or we're there's a big door, we sort of sneak behind the door and sort of go a bit of a cuddle or a bit of a bum pinch or something, and go, no one saw that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we do a bit of that. So,
I love that.
Yeah, you could take the opportunities wherever you are, and just, even if we go to the cinema, we just sit there and no one's, yeah. Or some popcorn.
Yes, for sure. I love to hear that, right? And I think that is one of the pieces that we miss in the long-term relationship is the flirting. When you first met, there was probably a lot of flirting happening, right? But again, that's something that kind of goes away, because what is flirting? It's like, you know, you're trying to get somebody's attention, right? You're supposed to show yourself off, whatever it is. But when you're in a long-term relationship, you don't need to have that person's attention. Mm. You've got that attention 24/7, right? You know, remembering how much fun it was to flirt with your partner is important, right? And again, that's part of building up the desire and recognizing that you've got to keep things like fresh and interesting and show your partner that you still think that they're attractive and sexy and that you want to, you know, be with them.
Yeah, my wife does it to me, and I do it to her from time to time, where she'll say, why don't you have your hair down today? Because you look much better with your hair down. Or how about wearing that dress? I haven't seen you wear that dress for ages. Or come on, don't wear your jeans again. Put something nice on, or put a bit of makeup on. I go, okay. And it's really nice to know that she cares and she's thinking about it, and she wants to see me in a different light, rather than, I can dress up a bit. And I'll say to her, come on then. Yeah, you too. Come on. Let's both look a bit posh. We're only going shopping, but why not? Why can't we posh up for a bit of shopping? Have a bit of fun, or go to dinner or something. So those are little ways of just showing your partner, the person you're intimate with, that you're thinking about them in that way as well.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, that is important, because, you know, what you're bringing up is, like, we all want to feel desired, right? Like, that is super important. And when your partner, you know, tells you, you know, oh, I love when you have that dress on, or put your sexy underwear on, like, you know that there's some desire there, right? And that they're thinking about you and paying attention to you. So that is, you know, an important piece of maintaining a good sex life, is showing for each partner to show each other that they still desire that. Right? Whether that's physical touch, whether it's using words, whether it's sending a sexy text, or whether it's telling your partner to, you know, not wear panties tonight, right? All of that is showing desire.
It's a bit wet and windy at the moment. I'd probably be safe with them on. Some pantyhose as well, yeah. Presumably, I'm guessing here, forgive me if I'm wrong, that you tend to get involved with couples who already have a desire to have a conversation. People who don't want to have a conversation probably don't get in contact with you. You're already seeing people who want to engage this. But I guess the key thing to start this off is, are we both agreed that we want to do something positive about this? Because if we can't agree on that statement, there's no point in carrying on, is there? We might as well just say, I never want sex again with you. I never want sex again with you. Maybe that's the honest conversation. Maybe that's the point where we say, actually, we either go into an open relationship or we part company.
Yeah.
Or we put up with that.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. I mean, you know, couples who reach out to me are often at the end of their rope, right? They're at a crossroads, you know, they're like, if we can't solve this, you know, we've been to therapists, we've been to sex therapists, but you're kind of, Janae, you're our last resort. If we can't solve this, then either we're going to open the relationship up, which is not generally, just in general, not who I see sometimes, occasionally, or it's more like we're going to go our separate ways, right? But they both have to be on the same wavelength, right? They both have to want to change. They both have to want to work on this. Otherwise, nothing's going to happen, right? But, you know, I mean, I think that a lot of couples, for a variety of different reasons, right, believe that marriage is sacrosanct and they are committed to trying to fix their relationship. Certainly those are people who tend to show up in my office, right? And they're, you know, they'll do anything, right? You know, especially if there are children involved and they feel like it's still fixable. Sometimes it's not, right, Joe? Sometimes it's like you've gotten to a point where the relationship is so toxic that the best thing to do is to separate. And I'm very honest with people if that's where we're at. But for a lot of people who, you know, have children in the picture and they're still like friends, right? If they're still friends, but they're not lovers anymore, there's a lot that can be done there, right? If they hate each other, that's a lot harder to work through. Yeah.
Well, I suppose you don't have to like someone to have sex with someone, do you?
You don't have to. Is that what you said?
Yeah, you don't have to.
Oh, you don't. You don't. But typically, if there's a lot of fighting going on, and it's a couple that has a tremendous amount of high distress couples is what we call them, they are not having sex because they are, one or both of them is feeling emotionally shut down. They're resentful. They're angry. They have no desire to be able to open themselves up to their partner and do anything for their partner that feels good. So, I mean, it is highly unusual that a distressed couple is having a very active sex life.
You're more likely to want to put deadly nightshade in the coffee, aren't you, I suppose?
Right, something like that. It's more likely that's going to happen.
That would spice it up a bit, yeah.
That would spice it. But I do want to I do want to bring up a point because I think it's an important point, right? You didn't ask the question, but I'm going to answer it.
Go for it.
So I think one of the places where couples really struggle is how do they know things aren't going right. Like we're very well aware that things aren't going right. How do we start to have a conversation about this without opening up Pandora's box, right? Which people are very, very afraid of. Like, if I open up Pandora's box, I can't put all this back in. How do we have a conversation about it without there being shame, without there being blame, without there being guilt, without me chasing my partner to the point that they're going to have an affair? And that, I think, is a really critical question that I look at a lot. And so I want to make a suggestion because I've actually tried to figure out how do I help couples get over that first step? Because once they get over that first step, then the conversation can open up and change can start to happen. So I created an intimacy equation quiz, which allows couples, I think we might have talked about this in our pre-call, which allows couples to be able to identify what their intimacy type is. It's kind of like a personality test, but there's a lot of different intimacy types, which is important to understand how do you communicate with your partner, right? Some people are much more emotionally focused. Some people are more sensually, like touch focused. Some people are more adventuresome. For some couples, trust and loyalty is really important. And so what I always recommend, and I'll say this to all of your listeners, is like to take this test, right? If you're the person who's like, oh, things are not going okay, but I don't know how to have this conversation with my partner, right? So take this test. You can find it at my website, which is howtoimprovemylovelife.com. It's like a 3-minute test. It's kind of cute. You'll get your results and you'll get some information about, you know, well, how do you interact? If this is your style, how do you interact with other styles? What are the things that you need to be concerned about? Where do you work well together? Have to be a little bit more aware. And then go to your partner and say like, hey, you know, I just took this kind of interesting quiz, this interesting test about like what my intimacy style is. And it's, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I'm kind of curious, like, what is yours? Would you want to take this test, right? And then ideally, that starts a conversation in a way that is not very threatening to either partner, right? And I do think that's really important, an important tool for couples to have an awareness about, like, how do we start this without one of us saying, we've got to go find a sex therapist. That can be very scary and off-putting to a partner who is not on board, right? But something like this allows things to happen at a lower, slower kind of pace. It just starts about curiosity and conversation.
Yeah, because I would imagine that first step, there's potentially blame in there. There's potentially a why. Mm-hmm. If I ask you why you don't want to do this, I do, you don't.
Right.
It's because the why opens, as you say, opens this Pandora's box of suddenly all this stuff comes back where you don't do this and you don't do that. And yet, so
it's scary. We're
then
right?
into a whole new territory, aren't we?
Right. Yeah, and for a lot of people, it's terrifying because I don't know what that answer is going to be. And I don't know what the consequences are going to be. What's the repercussions if we start having this conversation? Are we going to end up divorcing? Or is one of us going to go have an affair? Right. Which is why, like, having this quiz, this tool to be able to have a gentle conversation from coming from a place of curiosity rather than blame is so important to be able to start to fix things, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's good. As you say, it's more like a magazine quiz, and that you sit there and you tick back pages and go, oh, look, my sex style is this. I like. It might just be that you both sit there and look at each other and go, well, neither of us like initiating. We both want to have the other person initiate. And because neither of us do, we wait for the other one. It never happens. You get to the point where you've got your couples or your throuples. Presumably you work with a multitude of people here.
Yeah. I've never worked with a throuple I'd love to, but I never have.
I've got a couple of friends who are in throuple relationships, and I've never got any further than just going, okay, if it works for you. I've never really done a Q&A about it, but yeah, right. I guess in those dynamics, that it means you've got either more outlets to have different sort of relationship, and they're not necessarily orgies, are they, throuples? They could be one-to-one relationships.
I think if you're in a throuple, right, you know, by definition, you are probably in a place where there's a lot of good communication happening around your sex life, because you wouldn't be there. You couldn't be there if that wasn't happening, right? Like, that is, you know, one of the strengths of the poly open relationship community is people tend to have very, very good communication skills, and they're very transparent about what's happening, which is why, you know, I wouldn't expect to see a throuple necessarily show up in my office for what I work on. I could see them showing up in other offices.
Yeah. I was also thinking there that I would imagine that there are some people who have a fantasy or a desire that they feel is too much, either embarrassed to share it or that they think it would, we talked about it in the beginning, shame, all these sort of things going on. If I say, this would turn me on, they're scared the other person might go, oh, well, that's a bit, not sure about that. Oh, it sounds a bit icky to me. But that's really where their head is. You know, they went through the mechanical stuff when they were having children, and you have to do one of these and one of these and one of these to get children. But when you're after that, you think, well, actually, what I really desire is this, but I don't know how to approach that. That does your intimacy survey allow that to come out, or is that still a big barrier for people?
That would not be in this particular quiz, because I think that would be, you know, I mean, for me, from where I'm at, I think that would cause a lot of potential conflict in a couple, and then there's nobody there to help facilitate that conflict, yeah. right? And yeah. so I don't want to set people up where they have to, you know, go find a therapist because all of a sudden they're fighting because, you
You've
know, somebody
these boxes that said, somebody has a fantasy.
Yes, right. I mean, maybe that would be a better business model, but that's not how I work. But I will say that that happens, that shows up all the time. In fact, we always talk about that. I probe about that. We explore that in my work that I do with couples, because very often that is one of the pieces where there is a lot of shame. And 99% of the time, like, at least what the fantasy that they have is nothing crazy, right? But they've just like are so afraid that their partner thinks that they're going to be too big or too much or too weird. And that all just comes from, like, you know, a shame. For me, that just comes from like a shame place, right? But I really do help couples be able to be in a place where they can explore that with each other and have a conversation about it. And underneath the fantasy is really what we call the core desires, which are the emotions that you want to have when you're having sex. So what is it that's actually turning you on within that fantasy? And understanding what that emotion is, whatever it is, right? Then if you can't have that, if you can't accomplish that in that particular fantasy because maybe it's a boundary for your partner, how else can you get that emotion in your sex life? That's very important. That is like the difference between sex is only okay or it's good to sex is amazing and I want to keep on having it because that emotional need of mine, which goes back to a core wound as a child, is actually being met and satisfied. And that is the basis of that turn on and that fantasy. So I really help I really help couples, you know, I take them through some exercises and processes and conversations where we really pull that apart and really understand what's underneath and then how they can help each other meet that need, that emotional need during sex. Very powerful.
So not every fantasy needs to manifest itself in reality, does it?
Absolutely so true.
You could keep the fantasy as a sexting or a flirting or a sort of like all that tension. You hint, you go, well, we're going to be doing this. Wow. But the actual reality is it never gets to that point. You then break and go vanilla, if you like, or whatever it may be.
Yeah. I mean, some fantasies are better left as fantasies.
Like, yes.
I've had that experience, you know, of like a fantasy that I thought I wanted. And then we started doing it and I freaked out and I was like, yep, nope, that's not going to work.
No.
That was a lot better left as a fantasy, right? And that's okay too.
Sexy movies is perfect, isn't it? It
always works out.
The coupling happens easily. There's no kind of.
And then there's fireworks.
I'll be back.
Fireworks every single time. Everybody has an orgasm simultaneously. So yeah. Unrealistic.
I know.
But yeah, so sometimes fantasies are better off just kept as fantasies. You could use it for your own turn on, for masturbating. Some people go into fantasy during sex. Like, that's helpful for them. And if they do, I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like, whatever you need to get you there is completely appropriate and acceptable, right?
So fantasy isn't cheating then?
Not in my mind. At all. But some people do feel that's cheating. That is one of the issues that will come up on a not infrequent basis. Like, if I have a fantasy, it feels like I'm cheating. And so it's my job to say, yeah, no, like, no, fantasies, turn-ons, this is you soothing your childhood wounds. Let's really talk about this. Let's understand where this is coming from and why this is a turn-on for you and for your partner to understand that as well. But, you know, I don't see that as cheating at all.
No.
But I'm very open. I'm very sex positive. Like, I have no judgment, right? You come into my office, you talk to me, you read my book. It's a judgment-free zone, like 100%. It is, you know, I don't judge anybody for what their desires are, whatever it is.
Yeah, no, I can imagine if you're using some sort of porn in your masturbation routine, then by definition, that is not the part, unless your partner's given you the porn to look at or to experience. It's generally somebody else in those images, whatever it may be. So if you can rationalize that as not cheating, then that's not cheating. But yeah, at the point you're being intimate, if you're imagining the person you're being intimate with is actually somebody else, then that's where it becomes a bit confusing, I guess.
I think, you know, again, that's, you know, depending on where you are in your relationship and where you are in your level of communication. Do you want to share that? Not everything has to be shared either. I'm very clear with people, like, you know, you get to hold on to your own stuff, right? And you don't have to share everything with your partner if it doesn't feel, I mean, I feel like the more disclosure you have, the more connected you'll feel with your partner. But not everything has to be disclosed around fantasies.
Is it pretty evenly balanced between genders of couples where it's generally, it's either the male or the female? We're talking about heteronormative relationships here, where it typically both of them have an issue, or is it often one-sided? Is it after childbirth? Is it stress? We seem to have lost Janae, so I'm going to hang on here in case she comes back. Fingers crossed she'll reappear, and we'll carry on where we were.
That was weird.
Yeah, you're back.
Okay. Is that going to...
Because you got to go. So should we just...
I do.
Get to the close.
Yes.
Do you want to give me a final takeaway?
Yeah.
Things to think about. And then I'll go. So who are you? How do people get hold of you?
Okay, great.
I'll thank you. And then, yeah, how's that?
Yeah. I think, you know, at the end of the day, what underlies all of having more intimacy and more connection with your partner is, first, good communication. And though we didn't really talk about this much, emotional safety, which is a huge reason why couples are feeling disconnected and are not having sex and don't feel like they can actually have a real conversation with each other, because what they say might be used against them or weaponized, and they've been shut down before, right? Or criticized. Like, there's a million defense coping mechanisms that people use. But those are the two most important to me. Those are the foundational elements that and I focus on in my coaching and my book, around being able to create more intimacy in a long-term relationship.
Janae, it's been absolutely fascinating. We could talk all day, and I was in danger of sharing too much of my own love life as we were going through that. I thought, well, I better not say that, let me save that for my own relationship. But no, it's been absolutely fascinating. It's been really great. How do people get hold of you and find out more?
Yeah. So the best way to get hold of me to find out of my book is called The Sex and Intimacy Repair Kit, and you can pre-order it on Amazon. And Joe will have the link in the show notes. But the best way to get a hold of me and find out about my programs that I offer in my book is to go to this website, howtoimprovemylovelife.com. howtoimprovemylovelife.com, where you will also find the quiz. And then you'll get lots of information on also how to connect with me.
Brilliant, brilliant. howtoimprovemylovelife.com. That will be in the show notes. And I'm going to go and check it out in a minute. And I think if you listen to this, you should too, and find that quiz. Because even if you're not having trouble with a new relationship, you might find something in the quiz that will spark something new and keep the juices flowing for longer, as they say.
We love that.
Yeah. Tonight, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite. We'll